2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos, Tom Bettis with you this morning. We are taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. I can tell, Tom, that people are very excited to be outside. We're getting lots of texts and phone calls this morning and getting to as many of them as soon as we can. We've had several texts, though, about bindweed and morning glory and what in the world to do about it. So I think you should take just a few minutes and talk about the best ways to do that. And I want to mention to folks that you have done videos on both getting rid of bindweed in your lawn and bindweed in your flower beds that they can find not only on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page, but we also have a YouTube channel, the KSL Greenhouse YouTube channel. They can actually watch videos of some of the things you're going to describe.
Yes. And so in the flower beds, watch the video on controlling bindweed in landscape flower beds. Basically, just in summarized, the technique is to gather bindweed that's at least 6 inches to a foot long, and don't pull it up, but just get it almost in the shape of an old-fashioned broom and stuff it inside a gallon Ziploc bag and seal it in the Ziploc as best you can. Then poke a hole in the bag and you will mix about, you know, a half gallon of Roundup in a pump sprayer. Put the nozzle into the bag through the little hole in the side of the bag and spray until all of the vines are saturated. You may need to wear some rubber gloves just to avoid exposure and then just massage it around a little bit and then leave the bindweed in that plastic bag for 24 hours. You want to cover the plastic bag with an old sheet of cardboard or an old light colored towel because you don't want the bindweed to cook inside the bag, you know, from the sun because of the greenhouse effect with the plastic. So you cover it up, leave it for 24 hours, and then you can take the plastic bag off and let that work its way into the root system. But if you'll do that in your flower bed, you can get 90% control of the bindweed. It's a little harder work, but it does work. Now in your lawn, this time of year is getting warm enough that I'm kind of shying away from lawn weed killer. The only one that you might be able to use is made by a company called Image, and it's called All-in-One Lawn Weed Killer, and you can pick that up from local vendors like Cal Ranch, IFA, Steve Regan. There's others out there, local garden centers. But this Image product doesn't have any dicamba or 2,4-D, and so it has fewer temperature restrictions. But Image has an herbicide in it called quinclorac that is more effective against bindweed than any other commonly available herbicide. And so you can spray Image now, but what you would do, and the more critical time to spray is in the fall when the carbohydrates are being moved from the vines down into the roots. And if you'll spray sometime in mid to late September, early October, you can get those herbicides drawn down into the roots and it sits all winter and you get a lot better kill.
All right. Again, you can see those videos on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page or on the KSL Greenhouse YouTube channel.
Maybe on another segment, we can talk about organic control and non-herbicide control
of
bindweed.
Does that work on bindweed? I mean, the poison's not even killing the bindweed.
No. So, I mean, we can hit that now, but pretty much the options in the organic and reduced risk sprays are products that will cause wilt down. Mm-hmm. And so it's causing this chemical wilt down from an acid or an oil. And in essence, what you're doing is just lopping it off right at ground level and not harming the roots because the organic sprays are not systemic like conventional herbicides. And so it's almost like you've just taken a weed whacker out there and just cut it all up and then raked it up, because that's all you're doing is scorching it. There is one reduced risk herbicide, and there's several brands out. I know Captain Jack's has one, BioAdvanced has one, but they contain a product called EDTA, which is a form of iron. And you can spray it over the bindweed, and it'll knock it back a little bit. You have to go back in and spray 3 weeks later, and it's, for what you're getting out of it, quite expensive. But that is the only systemic broadleaf weed killer on the market, is that EDTA and some similar forms of it. But it has to be sprayed and is at its best when temperatures are between 50 and 70. So it'll still work, but if you spray it on your lawn, it'll yellow the lawn out a bit for a week or two. But otherwise, as long as you follow the instructions, it can at least suppress bindweed.
Okay. Harry is on the line in Heber City. Good morning, Harry. What is your question?
Yes, good morning. I've got two pine trees. They're about 35 years old, and I want to cut the lower limbs off up to a point about 6 feet above the ground. And I was wondering, when is the best time to do that?
You could do it now. It's never happy for a tree when that amount of limbs are cut out. But if you're going to do it and need to do it for safety or access, now's as good a time as any.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Harry, for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says they have a Honeycrisp apple tree. It's almost 10 years old. They always thin the apples out each year. Now, 2 years ago, there was not even a single blossom. Last year, covered with blossoms, which they thinned. Now, this year, again, not one blossom. They're wondering what causes that.
They've developed a pattern of what's called biennial bearing, and which is really common in apples. And even with thinning, they can develop that. And so next year, when they see it, I would thin even harder. So maybe one apple for every foot of branch to see if that prevents it. But sometimes trees develop that pattern, and it's really hard to break.
Okay, next listener wants to know, should they cover their new strawberry plants to protect them from the birds?
They can. The one thing they could try doing is putting either netting or low tunnels with the Rime fabric, a really light Rime, say at like 1 to 2 degree Rime fabric over the top. Those would be about the only ways to keep
doesn't
the
really
birds
protect
out.
The plant, though. It just protects the strawberries,
it does.
Right?
I mean, it's one of those things that if you want the strawberries and the birds are going after them, you either have to use a bird fabric or you have to use the Rime fabrics, the floating row covers, to keep them out.
All right. Mark is on the line from the Utah Iris Society. Good morning, Mark. How are you doing today?
Good morning. Just fine. It's a great day.
It's a great day.
Let everybody know that we are having our second and last Iris show here in Salt Lake today. It's located up at the Sugar House Garden Center. That's 1602. That's 1602 East 21st Ave. That's the very northeast corner of Sugar House Park. If you're coming up here, do not take the main park entrance. There is a special entrance and special parking lot for the garden center.
Now, last show, Mark, you had the shorter iris. This show, you have the larger iris, right?
Oh, yes. We've got lots of the tall-bearded iris, and we've got about a dozen flower arrangements. We're still setting the show up, and we'll probably be in the neighborhood of 150 to 200 iris stems. If you come up here, you'll most likely see iris that you've never seen before. And we hope you'll get excited about iris and kind of like and at least a little bit as much as we do in the society. The show will be open from 1 until 5 this afternoon. We're setting it up now. The judging starts at 10:30 and the show opens at 1 p.m. So it should be a really fun show. If perchance the parking lot's full, go a little bit further east and park in the Highland High School parking lot, and it's a very short walk over here to the Garden Center.
All right, Mark, is there a cost for this?
No, it's absolutely free, and we'd love to have people come up and see the iris. There's all kinds of colors. We've got everything from white to black and yellows and blues and purples and all sorts of things. About the only thing we don't have is the tulip or petunia red.
All right.
Those just don't happen yet in irises.
Great. 1 to 5 this afternoon at that Sugar House Nursery there. Thanks so much, Mark, for your call this morning.
And thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Phone lines are now open, and you can text us at 57500.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls, 801-575-8255. Also answering your text questions at 57500. Next listener says, Ton, that they want to plant a columnar tree on the north side of a 2-foot on the north side, 2 fat Albert spruce trees. The columnar tree would be part sun on the bottom half, but full sun on the top half. Can you recommend something that's 6 feet wide by 30 by 40 inches height? A tree.
I wonder if they're meaning feet.
I don't know.
Probably meaning
so
feet.
They're saying 2 feet. Albert, I don't know.
Huh.
You know, autocorrect gets me all the time.
Yes. And so if they're wanting something 2 feet wide, then the skyrocket or Taylor junipers would be the options. If they want something 6 feet wide by about 30 feet, then I would look at Kindred Spirit Oak would be another good one.
All right. Next person says they've noticed that their cherry tree has half-inch green worms. What can be done?
I don't know what they're referring to. I need more detail on that to give them any recommendations. So, I don't know if it's
there
in the,
aren't cherries right now. So
no,
usually
and so if
the worms
leaf rollers
are in there,
or there's a lot of possibilities. So I just don't have enough detail.
Okay, hopefully that they will send us some more information. Next person is losing a tulip tree. Not sure if it's dying due to root disease. They're wondering if they shouldn't plant the same. It sounds like they want to plant the same tree in the same spot, but they're wondering if that's a bad idea.
They need to figure out why the other tulip tree is dying. Tulip tree is an uncommon tree for Utah, although especially east of I-15, they do fairly well. They're related to magnolia, but they get taller. A tulip tree can get 50 feet high and wide, but they're in the magnolia family. And the wood, when it's harvested, is used for, used to be historically used for aircraft construction because it is light, but strong and really straight grained. It's kind of an interesting tree, but they'll get kind of a creamy yellow flower in the spring, a little bit ornamental, but it's a unique tree. I would figure out why the other one's dying. And if they can't figure it out, I might veer towards something a little more adaptable. You know, if they want something that size, like, say, a swamp white oak or a bur oak or maybe Zelkova or hackberry.
Okay. Next person had some deer problems. The deer ate the middle sections of their cypress trees and their blue atlas cedar trees. They say those sections are looking kind of dead right now, but the uneaten sections are alive and thriving. Is there anything they could do to help those other sections?
No, just let the trees grow to a point that they're too high for the deer to reach the foliage. And that's going to be the only hope. But a lot of areas, when you see trees on a hillside and every tree has 6 or 7 or 8 feet underneath it of no foliage, that's because the deer ate it. And so all you can really do if they're that tall is let them continue to grow, so that the deer can't get to the new growth.
All right. Let's take a phone call from Brent, who is in South Jordan. Good morning, Brent. What is your question?
Good morning. I was wondering about spraying out grass and how what you would use. Is it Roundup or whatever? And
where are you spraying the grass out from?
Out of the lawn. Off the edge of the lawn, I should
say. Okay. So Roundup is probably going to be your best option because there's really very few lawn weed killers or herbicides that will selectively take one grass out of another. There are a few, but it's very specific circumstances. And so something like Roundup and then letting it die and resodding or reseeding the area would be your best bet. But the other thing to consider is that grass moved in because it was more adapted to growing there than your lawn. And so you may need to look at your sprinkling system and just do a general evaluation so that you can see what is going on with it to try to prevent that in the future.
Okay, will a spray bother like plants that are close by? Will it get into the roots?
No, glyphosate does not get into the roots of other plants. Its pathway into a plant is through the foliage. And when it is sprayed on the ground, it is rendered inert fairly quickly, and it adheres to soil particles so tightly that it can't move into plants. And then soil microorganisms and sunlight break it down from there over a couple of months.
All right. Brent, thanks so much for your call. We're going to need to take a break for the top of the hour news. Just quickly, Ton, we were talking about bindweed, how to get rid of that. Is it the same for Virginia creeper?
It's a little different. You'd need to snip the stems and dab concentrated Roundup on the cut stem.
Okay. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more. Number for you to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.